is session two of Peace Starts at Home with Mickey Cashton.
Welcome, everyone. I am glad to be here with all of you. What I would like to do is to kind of like do a go-round to hear what led you to choose to join this class, and in particular, if any of the themes from last week it's something that you've already put in practice or have any questions or comments on, that would also be lovely to hear. And I would love to know who would like to go first. Thank you, Maria. Welcome.
I'm very happy to be here. I have a problem with anger. I realize the mechanic here is that I do tend to blame others for my own comfortableness, which of course is also taken very much from my family of origin, you know, my mother telling me that I was the trouble of her life. And now, you know, it's beginning to be very clear how deep these messages go and how I then absorb them and act out of them without really even knowing what's happening. I was reading NVC, The Language of Life, for about the fourth time, and finally it's dawned on me, you know, the four responses to a negative message. Second one, blame another, and it said anger. And I went like, anger? That's me. I'm blaming others. And I wasn't even aware that I was doing that.
Yeah.
Consciously. I was aware that I was doing that because I was definitely blaming another, and I was getting very angry. But consciously, I wasn't really grasping what that meant.
I just want to pause on it because those moments are so priceless when we really are able to cut through all the, you know, the like the buildings that we erect around ourselves and are able to make the inner choice to look and see what we're doing. And what really happens. It's amazing how much freedom begins to become possible. Yeah.
You know, you said something last class about taking 100% responsibility for the relationship. And what happened is that I don't feel like I take 100% responsibility for the relationship. I give up my freedom and my power using stuff like blaming, you know.
Yeah.
I go into victimhood. Mm-hmm. And I don't take responsibility. And this happens mostly with people like my husband, whom I care for. And I just can't believe how much rage I could go into.
Mm-hmm.
Or with my bosses, anybody who's an authority figure becomes a target for me. I'm shooting myself on the foot all the time. And I'm going like, what are you doing? Eckhart Tolle once said, notice the joy that there is in the anger. And I go like, what are you talking about? I don't understand that. And yet I look at it, I go, it has to be, because why would I continue in this trend if there wasn't something for me there?
Yes, it's, so, there is something very powerful about anger. When we start thinking of anger as a strategy that we employ in order to try to meet needs, whether or not we are successful at meeting those needs, something opens up, because until then, anger is just the thing to do. When I start looking at it like, what's leading me to choose anger? Even the question makes it possible to recognize that I don't have to. If I'm choosing something, then I don't have to. So let me tell you, from the things that I have done over the years of working with people, there are two things that I've seen in working with people about why we choose anger. At least two. And there are probably more. And I just want to offer them to see if one of them is meaningful for you. And meanwhile, I'm imagining that you're not the only person on the call who gets to places of anger. So I invite everyone to kind of like listen to our conversation through their experience. So one thing is that anger often is a strategy for power, for having an experience of being powerful. If I feel weak, vulnerable, frightened, helpless, or whatever, getting into a place of anger generates energy and gives me a feeling of being able to do something, So that's one. The other is that anger is sometimes a way for me, I'm not saying me like I, Miki, but for me, the person, to give myself the message that I'm taking myself seriously and standing up for my needs. I'm curious if either of these seems
relevant. I think
relevant
that the first one much more resonates more with me, because I do think I feel victimized a lot. So I think that I use that as a way of showing my power.
So with any habit that any of us has, the fundamental way to transform the habit is, first of all, really get in touch with the needs that lead us to the habit. And the habit in this case is anger. To really sit inside that need, inhabit it in full, really allow yourself to have that need. No fighting it, no thinking, well, I should get over it. None of that. Really, it's like, it's so important for you to have power, for you to have a sense of being a powerful person. Critical. Once you can really sit inside of there without resistance internally, then you can start asking yourself the question, well then, what can I do to give myself a sense of power other than get angry? And that's when really the vista opens up. I'm not suggesting that we get into it to explore it now. I'm just giving it to you as a practice for you to do.
Thank you. I will definitely take this very much to heart, because I can see, yes, this is what I'm doing. I'm using the wrong strategy completely.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, Lucy.
I chose the course because I realized how not to let my work take over my life and make time for personal development. And then I realized that actually personal development is part of my work. And in a sense, my career is my life, because I want to give service. I thought, if I just use life as the training ground that it is, then I can build skills in peace building every day of my life, everywhere I am. I can have a positive impact in my daily interactions. Mm-hmm. And if I can be some sort of light in my daily interactions, even if nothing I do for my paid work works out, then I still will use my life to give service. This week has just been amazing. I made requests, which felt so easy and so beautiful to stand up for myself without feeling that kind of anger or frustration, constantly feeling like, I'm not being heard, I'm not being taken seriously, just to say my preference would be that I would like that. The other thing I noticed was the generosity of doing things which weren't really something I wanted to do, but I didn't do them because I felt dragged into them and have really negative motivation all the way. I felt a real generosity of giving from the heart, and that felt wonderful as well.
Mm. So something opened your heart. It sounds like it opened both towards yourself and towards others.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I find myself not having anything in particular to add, just really appreciating that magic of openness that you shared. Thank you. Next.
I chose this class for two reasons. In a tense situation, in conflict situation, I would like to learn how to communicate in softer ways than I do. I try to be very tactful and diplomatic to a certain point. And then somehow, you know, I decide that the person is not getting it. Then my educator is really pushing him through. And then I just tell people very straightforwardly. And I think I could use some help in how to soften up my straightforwardness. Also, another reason is I have a toddler. This year, I decided to homeschool him. And a lot of issues crept up that are very agitating for both of us. So many places during the day when we get into power struggles.
Can I pause you for a second?
Yes.
I want to tell you that I didn't have the intention of working on parenting issues in this class. I was much more looking at working on adult relationships. So I feel a little hesitant getting into more detail because there is so much context and background. That said, I believe that you can apply what we talk about to your relationship with your child, because the biggest secret is that there's no difference between relating to children and relating to adults. Mm-hmm. If we make that choice, it's a big deal. In other words, you wouldn't try to tell an adult what to do. So if you can accept that premise of not telling your child what to do, then just about everything we do here, you can find a way of applying. If not, it's a very complex, different kind of situation that I don't see myself getting into in this class. So wondering how that is for you.
I don't know, because in the handout, you assigned to pick a relationship for the course. And this is the relationship I picked.
I see that I had that implicitly in my assumption without knowing that it was an assumption. At this point, I would like to know what could be a way to make this work for both of us.
I think I'm going to benefit probably anyway.
Okay.
As I said, I have two reasons for which I came to the course. You said that people go to anger because of powerlessness.
Yeah.
And so definitely that's true for me. I think I will be able to translate some of the things that you'll teach us to my relationship with my son.
And let's see how things unfold. Maybe we'll figure out a way to support you anyway. We'll see.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Turit and then Jean.
I can very much relate to what Maria Teresa was saying about anger. Just having NVC for a long time and still feeling that kind of a disconnection, and it's still the most challenging for me to deal with in an NVC way. I really want to learn to recognize my needs, to connect with my needs, and to be able to express them. And so I'm pretty excited about it, as well as nervous.
So it sounds like it's key for you, and I imagine for everyone else, to be able, especially in moments of difficulty, to pinpoint what is really going on, to come back to a place of choiceful connection instead of shutting down and going into automatic mode, which can be fight, which can be fly, which can be explaining ourselves, which can be hiding, which can be whatever our habit is. It's being able to really peel off the habit so that we can enter into the inside of us and really find the truth, the luminous truth, I want to say, the place of our great humanity that we work so hard to hide from ourselves and from others. To re-find it is the key to that freedom that allows us to then make choices that are aligned with how we want to be. That's part of what I'm hoping to focus on today. So thank you, Zurit.
Thank you.
Okay, Jean and Sharon, and then we'll be done with this forming our circle.
I've taken several of Mickey's classes through this NVC Academy, and they've been, over time, so rewarding, step by step, in just building my sense of confidence in having more skill, connecting with myself and other people. And when you mentioned, Mickey, having choices aligned with how we want to be in the world, what came up for me was a habit of mine, or the strategy of being a nice person, of being nice as a way of perhaps being more fully accepted by others and preventing myself from getting into situations where there may be apparent conflict. That's my assessment of the situation that I may not feel capable of dealing with. And what I want to continue developing for myself is the ability to express my own truth in a situation in a way that will bring out the most goodwill from other people or the most understanding from them. And even if it doesn't, to be fully present with what's going on anyway, be there and to have the confidence that I can connect with them regardless of what that may bring up. It's become more and more important for me to be more connected to my own truth or my own what's alive for me, and to be able to express that to other people.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I have become very interested in is the piece about mending the rift between honesty and care. There is something in the culture that sends a very powerful message that those two are mutually exclusive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And for me, there's so much intimacy that can come from combining them. And I hear what you're talking about as speaking to that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I am learning is that it isn't the truth per se that is difficult. It's that we only say part of the truth. That somehow that honesty that is so painful for others is when we only express a certain part of our truth. And we focus on it because it's the hardest one to express. So in some ways, it feels like that's really the truth and everything else isn't. So to use like a simple example, let's say somebody invites you to go to a concert. People will very often say, no thanks, I'm not available. They won't say, I'm so glad you thought of me. I'm not saying nobody says it. I'm just using this to illustrate. I'm so glad you thought of me. You know, I took a moment to really think hard to see if I could shift my conflict so that I could go because I really would have liked to. I'm sad that I can't. All of these pieces that are equally true to the factual observation that I have a conflict and therefore I'm not available and not going to come. And all of those pieces are the ones that convey the care. So it's not about making the truth go away. It's about bringing more of the truth into the picture that makes it caring. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. For me, what makes sense about that is that it's the, again, goes back to the quality of our connection with a person is what's most important, remembering that. That's what's important for, not whether I can go to the concert or not, or the immediate situation, but maintaining that quality.
Yes.
Yeah. Feeding that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Shannon, and then I will feel complete and happy to have engaged with all of you. At least I think so. I'm making a prediction about the future without knowing. Hi, Shannon.
If I think about why I'm in this class, it brings me to thinking about my relationships with my father and my sister and just the sadness I hold around those relationships. I have a way that I would like to relate to these people who are so close to me, and then I have the reality of how I often interact with them, which can be pretty different. So I'm interested in how to transform those relationships.
Do you have any inkling as to what you are bringing to those relationships that prevents them from moving where you want them to move?
Part of me suspects that I'm really like stuck on particular strategies is one of my suspicions.
Yeah.
And then I also have a fair amount of pain I've recognized in myself from these are the relationships that have been in my life the longest, pain that I haven't felt free to revisit or speak about with these people, and that's influencing me now.
You know, I have a painful relationship with someone in my extended family that we have both valiantly brought a lot of skill and commitment and mutual respect to, and it still remains difficult, although right now what we have been able to get to, which is priceless, is a sense of being able to hold together the difficulty. Even if we don't know how to shift it, we know how to hold it together. That is something that really changes things. So I want to offer that piece to you, one. Second is, through that relationship, I'm gradually learning that if I have pain in relation to another person, I want to be clear which of two situations I'm in. One situation is where I have pain about something and I can see something that the other person could do about it, short of a personality transplant. Because we are all very, very, very committed to having certain people have personality transplants. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
So, absent a personality transplant, do I have something concrete that I really believe this person could look at and say, yeah, this is something that I could do. If this will make life easier for you, I can certainly do it. Do we have something like that? If so, I want us to be able to express that, the request, in the simplest possible terms. Let them know what the meaning of it is and spare them the pain. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That's one kind of situation. Then there is another, which is where I have pain about something, and I know that the other person ultimately can't really do anything about it because they are who they are. And maybe one day they will commit to, you know, personal growth in the particular ways that I would like them to. It doesn't matter how much I think, you know, would not only be helpful to me, it would be helpful to 10 other people in the family that I am aware of that are also, you know, upset about the ways that you do X, Y, and Z. I'm making it up. This is not quite the situation that I'm facing. But you understand what I mean. Regardless of that, if the person is who they are and they haven't, for their own reasons, committing to creating certain changes, then I'm not in a position to make a request. And it's very clear inside of me to know the difference. Am I talking with you in order to make a request? If so, I want to clean up the pain and just give you what the meaning of this is and the specific thing that I want you to do and see if that is truly something you can do. If that is not possible, then I want to come to that person in an entirely different way. I want to come to the person and say, you know, there are these things or ways about you that I have reactions to. I recognize it as my responsibility, not yours. It's my responsibility to work on my end. And what I'm asking of you is to help me come to a place of peace by hearing my pain and understanding it. I'm not asking you to do anything different. I just want to have a sense of togetherness, to be known, because I think it will help me release you from the kind of like unconscious expectation that you will change. I want to take the responsibility. Do you see how hugely different those two are?
Yeah, wow.
Because unless we think about it this clearly, what we usually do is a third one, which is we come to the person with a blame and expectation energy that doesn't take them into consideration, just kind of like complaining to them about their behavior, whether we say it or not. It could be just in the way we look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Without really taking responsibility. That's the piece that I am offering you to work with. Wondering if this is helpful.
Yeah, I think I need to take some time and think about, especially the relationship with my father, and think if there is a clear request, or if it is personality things. If it is personality, if I can feel courageous to ask him to just hear me about it.
Yeah. And if you choose that, you need to keep checking in with him, if he's still able to hear you, if he still remembers, that you're only asking him to hear you and be with you. You're not asking for any change because you know it's not, that's not where life is.
Okay. Wow. Thank you.
Say more, because that wow tells me that there is, it's kind of like maybe challenging for you or something. I'd just like to hear one more line.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of it, I think, is about a perceived power differential, whether or not there is one, that just leaves me feeling like very scared to even ask him to hear me.
Yeah. 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 Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mickey.
All right. So all this is a very lovely introduction to the topic of today, which is what I call the inner building blocks of creating peace, which is all about the inner work that I have identified as essential to come to a place where we can create peace in our relationships. Each one of these, there are five of them that I've identified with enough clarity. There are probably many other tributaries or cousins of these. Each one of these five in and of itself is a lifelong practice. I'm going to say just a couple of words on each of them, then divide you into two groups for some engagement with each other before we come back into our larger group to do some harvesting. I just want more people to have an opportunity to engage with each other in this way. So the first one is about living in peace with unmet needs. This is one of the more difficult practices and in some ways the most essential, because it's kind of like the deepest, in some ways, it's a deeper level of attachment than what we usually recognize. So I think of there being two layers of attachment. One is attachment to a particular strategy. And then we know that, when we attach to strategies, if we connect with the underlying needs, we can release that attachment. Then there is a second layer of attachment that is almost unconscious, and that's the attachment to the idea that our needs are supposed to be met. That if our needs are not met, there's something wrong with the world, with life. Being able to release that attachment and to stay in a place of peace when our needs are not met is, in my mind, one of the highest forms of freedom. Because what happens when our needs are not met is usually we have some form of tension or contraction, something that gets mobilized to change that. That mobilization, that tension, that contraction takes away our freedom to choose how we want to respond in that given moment. So that is one of those practices. Then the second one is kind of related, and it has to do with releasing attachment and stepping into the unknown. It's related and similar and yet different, because I've come to believe that for a Western mind, and I imagine that most of us have been trained, raised in one form or another in the Western mind, being in a place of not knowing, not being able to control, not being able to predict what's happening is very unsettling for us. So choosing to step into the unknown is essential for being able to be in a stance of dialogue. Because without it, the dialogue is, however subtly so, an illusion. We are using dialogue as a way to make something happen that is what we want, rather than stepping into the magic of the unknown that creates outcomes that work for everyone. So there is a certain kind of letting go that is necessary in order for us to be able to truly be in dialogue and explore things with other people. So that's the second form. And once again, I'd like to see if anyone has a question before I move forward. Yes.
When you say release our attachment, are you talking about having an attachment to a particular outcome when you get into a dialogue with someone?
Yeah.
A particular agenda that I'm here, I'm really open to hearing from them, but what I really want them to do is something in particular.
Yeah. And
yeah.
This, you know, even though I said I wasn't going to speak about parenting, it's the best example because many parents, when they learn NVC, they do two things that make it extremely difficult for their children to trust that there's something real going on here. And it's kind of like a fast recipe for NVC allergy. The same is true with adults. It's just particularly blatant with children. Those two things are, one is to offer empathy to someone in the hopes of getting them to change their mind. And many parents do it with their children. You know, offer one or two or even three lines of empathy and then tell their child what to do, because the hope is that the empathy will make it shift. The other one is to make something sound like a request when it's really a demand. Those are one of the two ways that where we get into using the form of dialogue without really being in the intentionality of dialogue. Because in the intentionality of dialogue, empathy comes from curiosity and openness to see if hearing from you would shift me. Or would the empathy shift you? Just curiosity. Which one of us is going to shift? Maybe both of us. Maybe something new will be created. Maybe I will shift after hearing your experience. Maybe you will shift after hearing mine. That kind of like fertile, completely undefined, unpre-controlled possibility is only available when I can release that sense that, well, we're going to be in dialogue and then it's going to be what I want. Clearer?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, the third practice is the practice of vulnerability. This one has been my own primary practice for about 15 years, and it's a practice of essentially walking towards the fear, which in relationships often takes the form of fear of judgment, fear of loss of connection, fear of somebody being upset. It could be all kinds of fears. To really choose vulnerability instead of the protection that is our automatic response to fear. The more I can embrace the vulnerability and walk into it, the more I diffuse the conflict rather than increase it. When I'm afraid and I tense up around it, I'm going to appear to another person as if I'm hostile, aggressive or hostile. So softening, reducing the protection so that I can show my soft belly generates more compassion and connection than kind of like bracing around the fear. So that's the third practice that, again, can be a lifelong practice. Any questions about this one? Okay. And then the fourth one is the practice of heart opening and working directly with our judgments of others. This may be the practice that is useful for the people who have things come up for them around anger. And as a practice, it's really opening to the radical possibility that this other person, no matter what they just did, is completely human like me. Completely. Not in any essential way different. We are of the same kind. Even though I don't understand why they did what they did, on some level, had I been in their place, I could have done it, even if it makes no sense to me. Opening my heart in this way, to seeing the humanity of another, understanding the needs that might have led them to take the actions that don't make sense to us. That is also an ongoing practice that we can do again and again and again, many times every day. And then the last one is the practice of acceptance. Fundamentally, I'm thinking about our own self-acceptance, because, for example, when we look at vulnerability, one of the things that make it difficult to embrace vulnerability is lack of self-acceptance. If I show myself in my vulnerability, I will look ugly, we tell ourselves. Oh, I made a mistake. I have to cover up for it. I can't really show the truth about me because fundamentally I'm not accepting myself, and then I'm constantly worried about others. So coming to a place of relaxing into knowing my own humanity, knowing what I am choosing, how I'm living, that I'm limited and I'm also not. That is this particular practice, and we can apply the same awareness to others. My primary focus is on self-acceptance in this one. In a moment, I want to divide you into two groups of three for more engagement, and I'm going to ask you each to reflect on which of these speak to you that you want to make primary for yourself as a practice for a while. And how do you imagine that helping the relationship that you want to focus on? I will just read them again so you have them in your mind. And you don't have to be in the same group with people who have a similar practice. On the contrary, if there's diversity, you'll have a more interesting connection. So one is living in peace with unmet needs. One is releasing attachment and stepping into the unknown. Overcoming fear and embracing vulnerability. Opening our hearts and transforming judgments. Accepting our own and others' quote-unquote mistakes and quote-unquote limitations. So those are the five. In a moment, we'll break into two groups, and I would like to invite you to explore. Which one do you want to take on, either for a chunk of your life or at least for this coming week? And engage with each other. Why are you choosing this one? How might you apply it? How does it show up in the relationship? Wherever you want to go with it. If you have a question, then please press 1. Yes, Zurit.
I can recognize strongly a few of them. So how to determine basically when to walk on?
Think of it in terms of if you were able to move forward with this practice, with any of these practices, which one do you believe will give you the most leverage in your relationship? If you could do this, you can really see the transformative value. And pick that one. And if it's hard for you to choose, then you can, you know, talk about it a little bit and have your little group help you choose. Okay?
Yes.
And I would like to give you plenty of time to engage. I am proposing that we take 20 minutes to look at this, to really delve deeply into it so that we can kind of like jumpstart the practice, really begin to look at how we're doing this. What kind of actions can I put into my life to move forward on this path? I would suggest that every 6 minutes, you might want to consider shifting focus to the next person. I would really love for each person to have an opportunity to engage and to also choose what you want to bring back into our group for further engagement. Any questions or insights that you have to bring into the larger group. Okay, I will reconnect with you in 20 minutes. Welcome back. I am hoping you had meaningful discussion, and I would love to hear what arose from it, what you've looked at, what you learned, what remains open that you would like to explore. Who would like to express something or ask something? Hi, Tsurit.
I was thinking between the practice of vulnerability and the practice of opening the heart, the judgment. When I thought about it, I thought judgment is very strong for me. So that's definitely what I need to do logically. But I really realized that vulnerability would bring me much connected to myself. And I think that naturally will help the opening of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very much grateful.
I want to say more about what you were saying in terms of vulnerability and the openness to others and judgment, which is that if you think about it, it is much less vulnerable to express a judgment than to express the underlying pain of the needs that we have that give rise to the judgment. I completely see your intuitive sense that the two go together. Did what I say make sense to you?
Yes, very much.
Yeah.
I know logically that that's the way to go, but there's so much fear on the way and so much years of hiding that it's much harder to express the needs than to just say judgment.
Yes, that brings me to another aspect of this, which is that in order to engage in any of these practices, in a way, we need to be willing to overcome our, what I think of as an addiction to comfort. That there is something incredibly convenient about modern life. You know, you press a button and something happens, you get into a car and you get somewhere. All of these things have made it much more challenging for us to accept the discomfort that is intrinsic to life. And so this blends into the emotional realm so that to choose to embrace any kind of practice requires us to step out of the comfort of the familiar. Even when we don't like the familiar, it is still more comfortable by virtue of being familiar. And there's something about stepping out of our comfort zone that is essential if we're going to do anything different from how we do it now. Does this speak to you?
Yes.
Anything else you want to add in this moment?
No.
Thank you. What else did anyone discover or reflect on or ponder during your time in your small group? Or maybe you have comments on what Tsurit and I just discussed. Either way, I'd like to invite more people. Jean.
What came to me so clearly in the group that I was in was a practice that I picked was a practice of vulnerability. And for me, in particularly in relation to a community of friends that I see fairly regularly, it's taken me a tremendous amount of courage to speak up about issues where I feel something needs to be said or what we're not living, resonating with our core values or something like that. The place that I'm trying to go to from there is letting people know how important it is that I hear from them how what I just expressed, what I said, what's coming up for them when they hear that. That's a part that's still often missing in the way I express myself. So often when I speak, there's either silence or people just go on to the next speaker. And I really want to hold in my intention when I speak, not just saying, this is my concern, or this is what I really care about, this is what matters to me, but I want even more to hear how it is for you hearing that, because what matters to you is also very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that inclusion of everyone, I want that to be part of my intention so it comes out in the mm-hmm. way I express myself. I've more fully connected with that great desire in the process of going through this with this group.
Mm-hmm.
That was very meaningful.
I get that because it is the truth of what you want. Yeah. And you want your actual practice of speaking to catch up with your heart's intention.
Yes. And also, even though I may care very much about an issue in a particular way, that I'm speaking not just to get it my way, that I'm speaking with an outcome in mind. I want everyone to agree with me and tell them all the reasons why. But to be open as someone's to really having a dialogue, which means that there is a quality of magic or creativity within the group itself that I trust is there. It doesn't just have to come from me.
Yeah. All that being said,
yeah.
Beware of being so open that you actually let go of your needs, because your needs are part of that magic. If it's everyone else's but you, it's not quite the right magic.
Part of that would be making sure that people hear me in the way I was hoping to be heard.
That is part of it. And another part of it is, do you trust yourself not to agree to something that doesn't work for you?
No, not as much as I'd like. And sometimes it takes me a while to process, you know, what was just said. Does that really meet my need, or am I, wow? It takes me a while to process that.
You can always ask for that time.
I usually need time.
And my hunch is that if you really get the willingness from other people to have the time, it's not going to take days. It's probably going to take a minute. It's that all the time is required to convince yourself that it's really okay to look at your needs. If you give that to yourself from the start and get others' agreement, my hunch is it's not going to take that long. I'm wondering how that percolates in you.
What comes up for me here is that I'm imagining now, given the number of people that I've talked to in this organization over quite a bit of time, that many of the things that I'm have been expressing in one way or another, either through occasionally teaching or just speaking up at a meeting, are issues that are of great concern to many other people as well. And maybe I'm one of the people who's thought about them all quite a bit, written about them, talked about them. So I have some confidence that what I'm saying isn't just an issue for Jean. It may be for many other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And often there's fear for many people of expressing some of
yes.
these concerns, because there's a fear that, oh my God, if I say this, I'll be removed from the group or
yes.
chastised in some way.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm very clear about that as well. Yeah.
So whether it's with a group or with one person, the willingness to be in a position of dissent requires courage, requires, again, that stepping out of the comfort zone to kind of like make a claim, a stake, put your stake down and say, I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm not going to impose anything on you. I just am going to be committed to making it work for me and for you. And just the fact that it works for you doesn't mean that it also works for me. We're going to have to make it work for both of us. And to really stand in that, that's a very powerful stance. And it sounds like you are occupying it more and more.
Yeah, I have been for a while.
And I'm curious if there are yeah. people who come to you and say, I'm so glad you said this and that in the meeting, because I feel similarly and I haven't had the guts to speak up.
Oh, absolutely. And
yeah.
it's very uncharacteristic of me to be the person who's saying these things publicly.
Uh-huh.
I'm not used to doing that. But it's so important to me that I'm finding myself committed to doing that. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So I am. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Where are you in terms of embracing any of these practices as your own? What comes up when you imagine dedicating a piece of your life energy to one of these practices? Where does that leave you? Would you join us in discussing this? Hi, Maria Teresa.
These five practices that you gave us, I can see that they are practices for the rest of my life. You know, all five of them, I definitely see I need to work on all of them. But the one that I realized that it's closest to me at this moment was the first one, living in peace with unmet needs, because I realized that I have kind of a demand inside that my need should be met.
Yes.
You know, if I come out and ask for something, that it should be met.
Yes.
I am one of these people that I'm kind of on the lookout. I have my antenna out to help anybody and everybody, even before they ask me for help. And in a certain sense, especially when I ask for something and it's not met, I have been getting very upset. I now realize that there is a setup here that I am putting myself in. For one thing, I'm kind of creating a bind or a bond, you know, because even though my antenna is out to help others and this is good and I feel good about doing that, the fact that when I'm not helped, I resent it. It's telling me something about my expectation. I developed an expectation that somebody's going to do for me, they're going to reciprocate. So that tells me that I'm not really pure, to use that word. I'm not free. I'm not giving freely.
Yes.
There is something there that is being asked for, which is, I'm going to pay attention to you, but I'm hoping that you will pay attention to me.
Yes. It's. I'm just so touched by, again, your willingness to just look at yourself. It's very fresh. It's invigorating. I'm happy to be near it. So let me tell you, the way that I refer to what you're describing is I call it an invisible contract. I sign a contract with you in which I will do something for you and then you will do something for me. Except that I don't tell you that the contract exists or that I think you signed it.
That's right. The other person doesn't have to agree to it, doesn't even know, as you say, it's invisible.
Yes.
That's right. And I'm the one who's writing it and signing it for them.
Yes.
And then...
And then you come to cash the check that they didn't even know they gave you.
Yeah.
Of course, that creates resentment in you and shock and upset in the other person.
Yeah. So more recently, you know, I had attended a meditation workshop with Jack Kornfield, and in the middle of the meditation workshop, he said, you can't expect to have 100% of what you want. You know, you get a lot of what you want, but you can't have 100%. And the other day it helped me because an unmet need came up and I was asking my husband if he would help me meet it. I was making a request and he wasn't interested. And that came back to me, you know, I kind of remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And the remembrance of that gave me enough space to breathe and to say, okay, maybe this is one that doesn't need to be met. There was a softening in that, you know.
Yes.
And the other thing that I recognize too is that I get feeling very uptight and very needy, feeling like or thinking that the other person has to meet the need. But actually, I give up the possibility of me meeting my own need.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like the request becomes a demand, really, from me to them. But then I kind of disregard myself. I disregard that I could perhaps fulfill my need myself, that I could give this to myself, that there is enough power here to, one, either not meet it, but recognize it, acknowledge it. Because I find that is what's so key, is acknowledging the need and be willing to not having it met.
Yeah.
But at the same time, also be willing to ask myself, well, what would you want to do then?
So one of the keys is, you know, you mentioned it, is free giving. It's a very exacting, since you're willing to look at yourself, it's a very exacting path, because whenever you are swept up with this energy of generosity, of wanting to give, you ask yourself, am I willing to give this thing that I'm going to give and let it go? Expect nothing in return from anyone, not even from the universe. If I'm not, then I'm not going to do it.
You know, Mickey, at that moment, there is something that happens, which is that there is, and maybe that is the payment itself, that there is a sense of worth that I derive from giving. to another. It's like, see, you're good. And I need to look at that because that is the hook. There is really no generosity there. There is some generosity, but there is also this other.
So you need to separate them. To do the giving for the pure pleasure of giving. For the pure pleasure of giving. And one of the ways that you can check to see if it's pure, if it's like really just that, you know, like that wild, gushing wave of I want to give, which I'm sure you have. We all have it. You know that it's only that if you can envision doing the same thing anonymously. It might not be feasible in the situation. Imagine if it were feasible to do whatever you are called to do anonymously, would you still do it? If not, then what's attached to the giving? You see? Yeah.
It's not being freely given.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Oh, this is very satisfying. We are getting to really deep places in this practice, and I see that I would like to hear, however briefly, also from Gosha, Lucy, and Shannon, just because I'm missing your voices, if you're willing to speak to where you are. We only have a few minutes left, so it's not going to be at length, and I still would appreciate connecting with everyone. Gosha, are you willing to say something about where you are with regards to a personal practice like this?
I'm undecided on first and last point because both of them resonate for me. First one, I realized when you read and we talked about it that I had a tendency that, you know, if I'm not talking here about trivial needs, like, you know, very important needs, it turned out they would not be met. That was prompting me into action and change things in my life or in relationships. And what you say, it's okay, can come from a place that's okay, that the need, even though it's a very important need, it's not met, that you can hold that space and just be with it.
Exactly. It's not as in I'm giving up on having the need met. It's that I am releasing the tightness around it, that I can stand in that place of discomfort of the need may not be met, and I still stand tall and I still make choices. Thank you. Given the time, I want to proceed with Lucy and Shannon just to be able to hear from everyone before we end. Thank you. Lucy, anything from you?
I chose overcoming fear and embracing vulnerability. I realized for the first time this past week that I actually have a lot of fear.
That's huge.
And a feeling of readiness to embrace vulnerability. I also have an expectation or an anticipation that it could lead me to radically change my life.
We lost Lucy. She dropped off the call. Let's hear from Shannon briefly before we part. Shannon.
I also am wanting to look at overcoming fear and embracing vulnerability, and it seems like there's something about embracing vulnerability or connecting with myself to express what's going on in me that seems to be stepping into some kind of truth about that my voice matters, or that my voice matters when I am like dissenting in a group. So that feels pretty challenging.
Mm. Yeah, to express vulnerability when you're in a place of dissent is definitely challenging, to express it in an unprotected way.
Yeah.
Are you choosing to go towards it? Remember, you don't have to go from 0 to 100. You can take small steps, very small steps, like make tiny choices that take you ever so mildly towards more vulnerability. And then over time, that will get you there. You and everyone else, not just you. It doesn't have to be overwhelming. Calibrate it to your organism's ability to engage.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. I look forward to talking with you again next week for us to continue to work on creating peace in our relationships and beyond. Thank you, everyone.